Hi, Namulanta Kombo here with some very exciting news. Dear Daughter is back for a new series. I'm putting together a handbook to life for daughters everywhere, full of stories and advice to help navigate life. That's Dear Daughter from the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Hello, I'm Richard Gagoy, and in this special edition of Focus on Africa with Senegal at the Crossroads, coming up, speaking to the BBC, outgoing president Macky Sall declines to apologize for postponing elections last month.
Will you apologize on behalf of the presidency for the disruption that was brought about as a result of the postponement of the election, whether you played a role in it or parliament?
No.
I don't have to apologize because I didn't do anything wrong.
Can the opposition in Senegal win Sunday's elections and replace the governing party?
Since 2019, if you look at a lot of the indicators of governance and even economic development, Senegal has been on a bit of a decline, which is why the opposition groups see that they have a really good chance.
And just how engaged are the youth with elections in Senegal?
Recent studies, Statistics National Organization, say that every year we have 300,000 new job seekers enter the market, but the market only offers 30,000 jobs a year. So we really have unemployment problems, and also in the education and also health and security.
It's Wednesday, the 20th of March. Senegal is set to hold presidential elections this coming Sunday. Initially scheduled for February 25th, President Macky Sall tried to postpone them indefinitely, but that attempt failed, sparking some of the most violent protests the country had seen in recent years. At least three people died. The country has often been praised for its stability and democracy. Now, President Macky Sall has sat with BBC Focus on Africa's Wahiga Moura and tried to explain his version of the story. First, does he regret his attempt to postpone the elections?
Je dois préciser qu'il y a beaucoup de confusion dans ce qui se passe au Sénégal. On a dit le président a reporté les élections.
We hear the president postpone the elections. Nothing could be further from the truth, because in reality, there was a decision that came from the Parliament of the National Assembly, where an opposition group approached the office of the Assembly to request the postponement of the election. If it had not been for the Assembly which passed the law, which referred it to me, there would not have been a postponement of the election. So it's important to mention that, and everything that was done in strict compliance with the Constitution of Senegal.
You have previously been quoted as saying, and I believe this was when you were a candidate, a president can never stay in power a day over the expiry of their mandate. Those were your words, I believe, in 2012. You actually went back on your word, on a promise you made to the people of Senegal, that under your term there would never be, for any reason whatsoever, the postponement of an election.
Since the start of the electoral process, there have been problems and disputes. And this even results in very serious accusations of corruption. And this case is in court, so I don't comment. There was a parliamentary commission of inquiry, which was made, then a bill which tends to postpone the election for 6 months. It was on the basis of the referral to parliament that I withdrew the decree to give the National Assembly time to do its work.
Le temps à l'Assemblée nationale de faire son travail, et cela je viens de l'expliquer.
Why do you think Parliament needed to talk to you about the possibility of the postponement of an election?
They are
an independent body. Why did they need your speech? Effectively triggered their action, because that's what we saw in terms of
the Constitution of Senegal. If the law comes from the Parliament have to write to the President of the Republic. C'est la loi.
It's the law. It's the internal regulation of Senegal's National Assembly.
What opposition lawmakers say, and some of them sit in Parliament, the Parliament that you said were the ones who brought this to your office as the president, is that you are trying to extend your term in office, and some of them opine that it's because you are trying to get either your preferred candidate or your political party ready for the upcoming election, and you are not ready for that.
Moi, je suis étonné
I'm surprised. I am truly surprised by the value judgments made about me. If I wanted to stay, I would simply be a candidate. In Africa, everyone can have 5 terms if they wanted. If that had been my decision, no one could have stopped me except the Senegalese people who vote, who gave me their confidence twice. But I decided not to go for future elections.
Will you apologize on behalf of the presidency for the disruption that was brought about as a result of the postponement of the election, whether you played a role in it or parliament?
No.
I don't have to apologize because I didn't do anything wrong.
President Sall, I want to broaden this discussion a little bit to the region. We've recently seen coups. We've seen them in Niger, in Mali, in Burkina Faso, which have impacted these already fragile countries. And now we've also seen some of these countries announcing that they're looking to withdraw from ECOWAS as well. Where do you see ECOWAS's future? Does it still have a role in maintaining the unity and stability of West Africa?
ECOWAS has been the most important economic community in Africa, the most advanced in its integration process. I think there may be misunderstandings between the soldiers who are in these countries and the other 11 ECOWAS countries. But we must continue to speak to each other so that we achieve all of our objectives of stability, but also of economic integration.
What are your biggest fears for security fears, for West Africa? You share, for example, a major border with Mali. Is there a concern that instability caused by Islamist insurgents could spill over to your country?
Yes, the threat is at our borders. ECOWAS allows the free movement of people and goods. This is a factor of fragility in a context of growing terrorism. We must work for collaboration and cooperation between the defense forces of Mali, Senegal, Mauritania, and other neighboring countries. We must also have the support of the international community because the fight against terrorism is a global fight.
Do you pledge to the people of Senegal that on the 2nd of April, as head of state, you will step away from office, you will retire, and shepherd a peaceful transition, whichever way things may go?
Of course.
On April 2nd, I'm leaving because that is the end of my mandate and I do not intend to stay. I hope that all this will go well and that the president-elect will take office to continue the work that was done by his predecessors.
What's your message to opposition candidates, some of whom feel that you have curtailed their campaigns? And I'll give you an example. When you were trying to unseat the former president, Abdoulaye Wade, you had the room to campaign. You had the room to compete then as a candidate, Mr. President. But your political opponents, at least three that I can mention, haven't seemed to enjoy the same rights over the last 4 years. Yes. Ousmane Sonko, political wars, 2 years. Bassirou Faye, political wars, 1 year. All when it seemed that they were gunning to be competitors against you or your preferred successor. Not also talking about Khalifa Sall, who looked quite strong also about 4 years ago and then faced a slew of legal wars. Is it coincidental that when a politician challenges Macky Sall, that suddenly they get into trouble with the law?
They are not challenging Macky Sall. Ils ne sont pas en compétition.
They are not in competition with me. For a very long time, at least since July, I was not a candidate for another term. Nevertheless, it is not because you are a politician that you should not answer for your actions before the law. If they had followed me, there would have been a process where all the actors were candidates. If we had postponed the elections to June, we would have had the possibility of having amnesty, which would have given them back a certain number of rights. So that Sonko would have been a candidate, Karim Ouad would have been a candidate, as well as all the others. So if we didn't have the time we needed to campaign, it's not my fault.
When you look at the headlines in different media outlets over the last 3-4 months regarding Senegal, it's been about this beacon of democracy, real pillar in the region that seems to have degenerated, that looked quite fragile as compared to how it was viewed before. I asked whether you'd take political responsibility. You said no. Would you take personal responsibility as the head of state for what we've seen coming out of this region and out of this country over the last 3 months?
What happened during the last 3 months shows that there was an information campaign targeting Senegal and its president. There was a gap of 1 month between the initial date of the election and the election of March 24th. Just 1 month. So we still have to put into perspective the judgments we make about Senegal, its democracy, and its president. In the progress of states, there comes times where there are crises, and it is these crises which strengthen democracy. And I think that this crisis has shown that we have solid institutions, and more than ever, our democracy is set in stone.
Notre démocratie est inscrite dans le marbre.
Senegal's outgoing president, Macky Sall. Well, let's get some reaction to what the president had to say and look ahead to Sunday's election. Someone who's got their finger on the pulse is Emma Birikorang, the acting director of research at the Kofi Annan International Peacekeeping Training Center in Ghana.
Hi, Richard. How are you today?
I'm keeping well. How about you?
I'm very well too. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I really appreciate having you on Focus on Africa podcast.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
You may have listened to the interview with Senegal's President Macky Sall. What do you make of what he said?
It's interesting to listen to his intervention just now, and it's a good thing that he's talking and the international community is listening to his side of the story. But I think that the bottom line is, it's really not about the international community. It is about the Senegalese people and what they think about what is occurring in the country. It is obvious that a lot of Senegalese have lost confidence in President Macky Sall. And so his believability has reduced significantly since he came to power in 2012, when he ruled on the wave of popular uprisings and demonstrations against the former President Watt, and he won elections. But we've seen that since then, his popularity has gone down significantly since then. And so people do not believe him as much when he tells them that he really did not intend to run for power anymore. This has happened because of the fact that even though there has been a change in government, people feel on the ground in Senegal that there hasn't been much change in terms of the governance principles. Corruption, human rights violations have remained the same or even worsened. As you put to him during the interview, whenever opposition parties put their name out to run against him, suddenly they are faced with all kinds of legal troubles and some have been imprisoned.
Indeed, you're talking about the stark contrast in the past, 10 plus years, comparatively from when he joined office to now. If you listen to the interview, he said nothing to apologize for the disruption that the country has, been through over the past couple of months. How do you think the Senegalese population will receive this?
I think it's in bad faith. They think he has not honored his word. They still do not think that he did it for the sake of Senegal. Most Senegalese think that he did it because he had ulterior motives, that he really did want to stand again. But because they stood against him and they started a number of protests, he now decided to backtrack. And so they really do not believe him. I mean, it's his prerogative to determine whether he wants to apologize or not. At this point in his political career where he's on the way out, he's probably thinking that he doesn't owe anyone anything in Senegal at the moment.
You know, there's so much uncertainty about the date of the elections. Of course, now that's been fixed. It's definite. And if you listen to President Macky Sall, he's been very categorical in terms of the independence of the electoral body and also the electoral process. Do you expect the elections to be clean? And is there a risk that the outcome could be rigged?
If I put my foot down and say the elections will be clean, maybe I'm being naive because anything can happen in any election. But we've seen in Senegal that its institutions are pretty strong. We've seen what the Constitutional Council has been able to do. And we've also seen in the past where power has been handed over from one democratic regime to the other. And so that gives a certain level of confidence that the process may be, I don't want to use the word clean, the process may evolve a little bit smoothly and that the outcome may be somewhat satisfactory in the end.
You know, there's a general sense of dissatisfaction amongst the Senegalese population in terms of how the ruling party has governed the country in the past decade. And picking a candidate, you know, from the ruling party, it's widely seen as possibly a continuation of the status quo. Do you think the opposition really stand a chance in terms of winning these elections?
Absolutely, absolutely. We've seen that since 2019, if you look at a lot of the indicators of governance and even economic development, Senegal has been on a bit of a decline, which is why the opposition groups see that they have a really good chance. And so we've seen the involvement over the radical groups such as the Patriots of Senegal, which is led by Ousmane Sonko. Even though he's currently not allowed to run, the party still has a candidate. They still have a very good chance because of what Senegalese perceive as the poor governance of President Macky Sall at the moment.
And because you've been researching and keenly, you know, just looking at some of these candidates, interrogating their election manifesto, their philosophy, their ideology, and what really they stand for, what are the main differences among some of the notable candidates in terms of their policies and their agenda as they go into this election?
Well, if you look at the candidates, Richard, you find that many of them are, as you call it, more of the same. And then you have the radicals on the other side, you know. So, for example, you'd find President Macky Sall's candidate, Mr. Amadou Ba, also Mr. Idrissa Seck. And, you know, all these candidates, you know, are from the old regime. You know, you have the old candidates and you have the youth, those that are on the youth side, you know. So specifically the candidate of Ousmane Sonko's party, the PASTEF. And these are radical groups. These are groups that are against France, if I could call it that way, anti-establishment groups, essentially. They have evolved as a pan-Africanist reformist party, you know, which seeks to challenge political, administrative, and economic flaws. You know, so most of the alliances have been against neo-colonialism. They are trying to redefine some of the historical partnerships that Senegal has formed, especially with the West, especially with France. And considering the anti-West, anti-France voices that are emerging in Francophone countries, it looks like we'd have a really interesting election on our side. Depending on how the Senegalese people vote, we'll know maybe what they think about the West or France specifically or not. It looks to be a very interesting election coming up.
Yeah, really valuable insights into this. Thank you so much, Emma, for just sharing with us your perspective on this matter. Really appreciate your time and thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to join the discussion. I'm wishing you the very best.
That was Emma Birikorang from the Kofi Annan International Peacekeeping Training Center speaking to me from Accra. Senegal has a sizable youthful population with more than half under the age of 19. The majority are grappling with frustration for lack of employment opportunities. This has forced many to turn to the informal sector to earn a living. Staring at a bleak future with no prospects for jobs, lack of housing and surging inflation, many are seeking a better life elsewhere by attempting to migrate mostly to Europe. If they survive the perilous journey across the Mediterranean Sea, there's possibility that they might be deported or turned to crime if things don't go to plan. This is why many young people are banking their hopes on political leaders who can relate to their struggle to change their fortunes. Will Sunday's election deliver? I've been speaking to the co-founder and executive director of Social Change Factory, Aram Gay Sen. Young people in Senegal seem to be quite invested in matters of governance. They have featured very prominently in protests, which we've been covering here on the podcast in the past couple of months. Just paint the picture for me. How engaged are the youth with elections in Senegal? Are they voting, by the way?
Yes, young people are really involved for the election. It's really important for them. You know, the past recent year, we really suffered from a malaise, the Senegalese youth in general, and they are always questioning institutions, and young people are facing numerous of challenges. They want to be autonomous, they want to live with dignity, and they're also losing hope in their country. So this is why you see some of them, they prefer to live in the risk of their own lives. Young people have hopes. They really want to vote. But we had some problems in the last month with the postponement of the elections. So they were really involved because they really want this election to be taking place. And we're glad that it will be on the next Sunday.
You know, initially, there was a lot of uncertainty in terms of the election date, as you have pointed out. And you say that this election really matters to the youth. What are they concerned about?
You know, this past month or years even, young people have suffered a great deal of repressions during the protests. The civic space has been reduced. Internet has been cut off several times and universities have been closed. They were opened just recently. And also the unemployment rate, who is really high. We have problems in the training, education. Recent studies, Statistics National Organization say that every year we have 300,000 new job seekers enter the market, but the market only offers 30,000 jobs a year. So we really have unemployment problems, and also in the education and also health and security.
It must be really frustrating for the young people, you know, just the challenges of getting employment. Well, how comes things didn't really seem to change under President Macky Sall over the past two terms when he's been in power?
The government have been launching a lot of initiatives to support youth employment, including training, entrepreneurship programs. Efforts have been made to improve access to education with an emphasis on technical and vocational education. But we also have to say that while progress has been made, we still have some concerns.
One of the challenges in how some of the youth are dealing with this, they're saying, well, much as majority of them seem to be having a lot of hope and they're banking on these elections to deliver that change, it seems that many of them are looking for a future out of Senegal. So migration is a big issue. Do you think then this election and possibly whoever they're rooting for would be able to address their concerns and possibly even reverse the wave of migration?
I don't think that the changes that the young people want will be effective just after the election. You know, many of them work in the informal sector. They are street vendors or motorcycle cab driver, even if they went to school. And the immigration for most of them is just the quest for a new life where they will be able to live in dignity, but also to be able to make their family proud. I think we need some time for the next president to really change their life. And I really hope that they will not be too disappointed because the hopes are high. And I don't think that it will be changing just the next day after the election.
And who are they looking at possibly to deliver this change? Which candidate is that?
I mean, when you see how the young people go to the streets, how they protested, we think that it's the Jomai coalition. But we see them in the street, but we're not sure that a lot of them are registered to be able to vote next Sunday. If you don't vote, you cannot elect your next president.
I wonder, because there would be a lot of mobilization that is going on, you know, just to get a lot of youth, you know, registering. Why are you so conflicted when you're thinking about that? Because it's one thing to really be out there in the campaign trail, but it's another thing showing up, you know, at the ballot to vote.
Yes, it's really two different things. And when you go to the website of the organizations responsible of the elections, you see that it's really not high at all. The people who are more than 35 years old are the main, and they are above 50% of the registered to elect.
Is it because there's general lack of interest in the elections or the electoral process? Do they have faith that the elections will be free and will be fair?
Not all people think that the election will be fair, because in the new government, the person who are in charge of the organization of the elections are from the actual party in power. But I think the civil society is doing a lot of efforts to raise awareness about that. So we are really hoping that it will be a fair election and all will be in peace.
Aram Gay-Sin, co-founder and executive director of Social Change Factory. Despite the political turmoil and postponement of elections in Senegal, an elementary school in Dakar has gone ahead and held its own presidential elections. Six children ran for the position and presented a full program to their classmates, even giving interviews to the press, a true exercise in democracy. First, the school's presidential candidates were asked why they think it's important to vote.
D'après moi, c'est important de voter car...
For me,
It's important to vote because voting allows you to express your choice.
Voting is an act of kindness for your country.
Then, whether they had any advice for the future president.
My advice is that the future president must keep all his promises to the nation.
If I had one piece of advice for the president, it would be to lead our country with empathy and commitment.
My hopes for the future of the country are that the country will be well developed, that the country will function very well, that the country will not be poor, that it will be a very rich country.
I want the future president to reduce the prices of food products and unemployment.
Well, after a tight race, a female victor emerged. The last voice you heard there was Anais, who was elected by her peers as the school's next president. All the best to the people of Senegal in Sunday's poll. And that's it for this episode of Focus on Africa. This podcast was put together by Alfonso Daniels, Rob Wilson, Stefania Okereke, and Daniel Dadzi in London. Paul Bachbinga was in charge, and Jonathan Greer was our technical producer. Andrew Lombard and Alice Modengi are our editors. Also check out our sister podcast, Africa Daily. It's a deep dive into one news story shaping the continent. Find it on BBC Sounds or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Richard Kagoy.
Where to Be a Woman is the podcast celebrating the best of women's well-being. I'm Sophia Smith-Gaylor.
And I'm Saatchi Paul.
And we're on a quest to find out where in the world women are living their best lives.
We're hearing from some incredible women about what their countries are getting right.
And picking the best bits for our female fantasy land. Because you can't build it if you can't imagine it first. Where to Be a Woman from the BBC World Service.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.